This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Grace Marie Turner, president of the Galen Institute, one of the leading healthcare policy organizations in the nation. Grace Marie has been feverishly following every twist and turn in the national healthcare debate, and she's once again kind enough to join us and offer her thoughts on the latest developments. And Grace Marie, it's always great to have you with us.
Always a pleasure, Greg. Thank you.
Well, the words "dead on arrival" are being used by a lot of people just 24 hours after Max Baucus, the head of the so-called Gang of Six, chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, came out alone to outline the principles of his health care bill. It doesn't have a public option, but it has a co-op, which has yet to be well-defined, as well as what he says is cost-cutting measures that will not add to the deficit and so forth, while also covering what everybody wants to see, and that's coverage for pre-existing conditions and not having health care ripped out from underneath people once they get sick. But how much have you been able to see of this, and what do you make of it?
Well, you know, a lot of the goals that they're trying to achieve are right. People should know that when they purchase health insurance to protect them against the financial consequences of major medical bills, that they should be protected. They should not be dropped if they get sick. It happens so rarely. But yes, we can assure that people can keep their health insurance. But this bill, you know, the art of politics is the art of compromise. So if somebody puts out something out there that everybody hates, beware, because that's the thing that's most likely to pass. Because, you know, I think there's a lot of posturing going on, because everybody's saying, oh, breathlessly, we have to wait for the Senate Finance Committee to come out with something because that's going to be the one that's most likely to pass. And then the liberals start to shoot at it because it doesn't have a public plan, and the conservatives start to shoot at it because it's still too much big government. And in the sausage factory that is Washington, that's actually the thing that's most likely to pass. And when you think about this, president has to get something through. And he is going to strong arm everybody. It may not be this exact bill. There's still going to be battles over whether or not we have a new government-run entitlement program that's either planting the seeds for it or getting it in place altogether. But they are going to pass something, and it's very likely to look a lot like this bill. And it is still a frightening piece of legislation.
Grace Marie, go over again for our listeners as well as for me. What is exactly the co-op that Baucus is calling for? How is it different than the public option?
Well, the co-op doesn't exist in anywhere in nature in the way they're trying to structure it. Co-ops tend to be locally run co-op. We've all seen food cooperatives, rural electric cooperatives, telephone cooperatives, where people pool their money together on a local level to bring services to a community where there's really not a commercial venture that's capable of doing it. But they're very local, and they really are member-driven. Credit unions are often started as co-ops. But this is a very different thing. When you're putting $7 to $8 billion of federal money into a startup, lots of strings attached, money coming down from the federal level into these communities, there's absolutely no way that this is going to look like the kind of cooperatives that we see on a very, very local basis that work or don't work. There's one co-op that actually provides health care in Washington State, and there's no evidence whatsoever that it does a better job of providing more affordable coverage and care than any of the other commercial providers in the area. So it's got to be a placeholder for the public plan, and the fact that they're calling it a co-op is not fooling me. It's still going to be a new government-run health insurance company, agency, whatever, that is going to be very dominant eventually in the markets and kill private competition.
Grace Marie, another thing we're hearing about from critics on both sides is what this Baucus plan would do to Medicare. What have you been able to determine?
Well, one of the major ways they're going to pay for this is alleged cuts to Medicare. All I can do is look at the record of their ability to say that they're going to be able to take $500 billion out of the Medicare program over the next 10 years. There absolutely is waste and fraud and abuse in the Medicare program that should be eliminated. We don't need this new piece of legislation to be able to eliminate the waste that's already in the program. But as evidence of the Congress's inability to address this issue, when the Bush administration came up with 7 new regulations designed to stop documented fraud and abuse in the Medicaid program. This is a program for lower-income Americans that the General Accounting Office, the Government Accountability Office, they've changed the name, the Office of Inspector General at the Department of Health and Human Services, all said is fraud is taking place in this program. Money, Medicaid money, taxpayer money, was being used to take people to bingo games, to take them shopping for party dresses. And they said, we've got to put some rules into place to stop this. And Congress shut them down and said, no, we won't put these rules into place because people need this money. So what do we think are the chances that they're really going to be able to cut $500 billion out of Medicare to pay for this new entitlement program? I, for one, am not holding my breath.
Grace Marie, another thing that I heard today is from those who insist on the public option. I believe it was Congressman Wiener out of New York. He says that one of the things that he's backing, in addition to the public option in general, is something that he also claims is gaining traction, and that's just over time expanding and making earlier the eligibility for Medicare. He says it's a proven success story, although it's obviously in a financial crisis. Do you get the sense that that has a lot of traction, and what do you make of the idea?
Well, and actually, Joe Entos from the American Enterprise Institute and I had a piece in last Friday's Wall Street Journal about the 10 top reasons why Medicare is not a model for reform. Number one on our list was that the program is going bankrupt. It is $38 trillion in debt. Of course people like this program. They are getting many times back in benefits the amount of money that they put in the system. It is a Ponzi scheme. It is going to crash at some point. To say that we're going to put another 100 million Americans on this program is crazy. Another reason, doctors already are starting to say, I can't see any more Medicare patients. They pay me less than my cost of seeing these patients. The Mayo Clinic and a number of other major clinics have sent a letter to members of Congress saying that if more patients are paid at Medicare rates, they close their doors. So the very organizations, these integrated healthcare systems providing top quality care, affordable prices, say we will go out of business if you do this. I mean, they're living in another world. This is fantasy land to think that you can keep the quality of our healthcare system, pay everybody at Medicare rates, and somehow add 100 million more people to this program. It's crazy.
Grace Marie, just a couple of minutes left, and I want to get your thoughts on another provision that's in the Baucus bill, but it's also something that's been talked about a lot on even from both sides of the aisle. It doesn't seem like a lot of Republicans have a big problem with this, which is kind of surprising because much of this debate is about competition and choice. But one of the things there seems to be at least substantial agreement on is that people should be forced to have insurance coverage. Now, most people would argue that that's probably a good idea, but it says that within 4 years, you must be covered. You don't have the option of not having coverage. You have to have it, and you will probably have to meet certain standards in that coverage. What do you make of the individual mandate?
This has been a real sleeper issue, and I've been thinking, you know, it's not just a public plan. It's the fact that the federal government is now going to require everyone in this country to have health insurance, and what does that mean? The federal government needs to define what qualifies as acceptable health insurance. Politicians are incapable of not having this be the most generous Cadillac plan anybody can imagine. Medicaid on the books is a tremendously generous plan, but they pay doctors and hospitals so little that most people on Medicaid, again, the program for lower-income Americans, wind up having to go to a hospital emergency room because no doctors will see them. So I just think that the whole idea is just completely based upon a very false foundation.
And why do you think that there's so little opposition to this?
Well, because I think people they really are astonished. They couldn't believe that Congress is going to require them to have health insurance. The Baucus bill says that a family of four will have to pay a $3,800 a year fine if they don't have health insurance. Once again, that the government defines. So I think that there's going to be a huge backlash. There is a reason that President Obama has gone to a university campus today in the Washington, D.C. area to try to tell young people, don't worry about this, you'll be fine. Unfortunately, they will not, because young people are going to be forced to purchase health insurance, and they're going to be forced to pay a higher price than they would on an open market, so that older, sicker people don't have to pay so much in premiums. There are better ways to solve this problem than requiring everyone to have health insurance. We can get to universal coverage, but this is the long arm of the federal government, and it is going to lead to a whole cascade of federal interventions into loss of freedom about basic decisions about how we live our lives.
Thank you so much, as always, for your time.
Thank you, Greg.
Grace Marie Turner is president of the Galen Institute. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.